Approximately 10% of kids in the United States have been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. Although we know that ADD can persist into adulthood, we don't know how many adults are affected by it. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to talk about attention deficit disorder in adults. Rick Green is well known to public television audiences as the co-creator and one of the stars of The Red Green Show. He was also diagnosed with ADD as an adult. He's written about how this diagnosis changed his life in the book ADD Stole My Car Keys. I'll also talk with Morgan Hall, a clinical psychologist in Des Moines who treats adult attention deficit disorder. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. About a year ago on this program, we spent an hour exploring attention deficit disorder in kids. It's a common diagnosis. Nearly 10% of kids in the United States get treated for it. This hour, we're going to talk about attention deficit disorder in adults. Later in the hour, Morgan Hall, a clinical psychologist who practices in Des Moines, will be with us. But first, with me now is Rick Green. That's a name that may ring a bell. He's well known to public television audiences as the co-creator and one of the stars of The Red Green Show. He was also diagnosed with ADD as an adult. He and his wife produced the award-winning documentary ADD and Loving It in 2009. He's now co-authored a new book called ADD Stole My Car Keys and helped to create the website TotallyADD.com. Hi, Rick.
Hello, how are you, Charity?
Great, thank you so much for being with us today.
No problem. Bill from Red Green actually gets to speak. It's great.
So you first started thinking about attention deficit disorder when your seventh grade son was diagnosed. Tell me what happened.
Well, I noticed you said off the top that 10% of kids in the States are being treated. I would check that number. It's probably far less than that. There's a theory that about 9% would qualify. Most people would say 5 to 7%. And if you look at the rate of kids who are actually getting treated and most, you know, or having it dealt with, it's still quite a bit lower. Now, in adults, it's like maybe 4% of, so 1 in 25 adults falls into this spectrum. And what happened is my son was gifted, doing well, went to grade 7, and suddenly started failing because now he had homework and he had no place at home to do homework. A bunch of stuff was going on. I was going through a divorce at the time, so it was really stressful on him. And his systems fell apart completely, and he went from failing, or from, you know, top of his class to failing. And in the testing that was done, somebody suggested maybe that he had attention deficit disorder, less of the hyperactive, so just ADD, not ADHD. And the testing showed, in fact, that he scored quite high. So, you know, the teacher would give an assignment, and he would tune out halfway through the question and then have to ask questions and or not get it done or forget that there was homework and all of it. So when I was, you know, very upset, of course. So this is awful. There's something wrong with him. It's an illness, da-da-da-da. And then I started reading what it actually was and learning about it and, of course, recognized myself immediately. 80% of ADHD is inherited. It's about as inheritable as your height is. So if you have two or three kids and one or both of the parents have ADHD, darn likely at least one of them is going to have it. So sure enough, he got treatment and things turned around dramatically, structures put in place, and I did the same thing reluctantly because I was worried I was going to lose my creativity. And as one of the doctors on our website, TotallyADD.com, says, you don't want to lose the Michaelness of Michael, or in this case, the Nicholas of Nicholasness of Nick. And I was astounded at the difference dealing with it made, and there's a lot that can be done. So it's really fantastic.
Tell us, when you were reading about ADD, what were some of the things that you read about that you thought, wait a minute, that sounds just like me?
Paperwork is like kryptonite. I hate paperwork. It's having an agent or someone else do it was great. Lots started, but nothing finished. Interrupts. Talks too much, motor mouth, feels like they're driven, evocation, agitated, distracted, eager to do, trouble holding things in memory, so forgetting that, you know, it's everybody, as the book we wrote, ADD Stole My Car Keys, suggests, you know, everybody loses their car keys, but not three times a day, and not when you have a place to actually put your car keys, but you never actually put your car keys there. So this is the issues of sometimes emotionally overreactive. What are some of the others? I mean, I went down the list and I went, wow, this isn't everybody. This is just me. The flip side is, you know, we do studies have shown we score higher for creativity because we're less inhibited. So we can be very impulsive. We're great under stress. So if you go to a police station or a fire hall or the military or an ER room with the doctors and nurses there, you're going to find the ADHD people there because they love the short, fast, intense burst. Huge number of professional athletes. Silicon Valley, Hollywood, Wall Street, full of ADHD people. And it's what's interesting is that ADHD is what's called a spectrum disorder. It's not an illness. You're wired this way. But you can actually, you know, we now know about neuroplasticity, and you can rewire the brain and do tremendous things with a variety of different practices. But what's interesting is that it's not really it is a spectrum. It's kind of like height. So when people say, well, everybody's ADHD, I say, yeah, everybody has ADHD and everybody has height. The question is, how much of it do you have? How often are you losing your car keys or late for meetings or forgetting things or not able to deal with stuff, over-promising, over-committing, jumping to the next thing the moment there's a problem? And so the discovery of this is, it's kind of like there's nothing wrong. It's just I'm at the end of the spectrum. If I was 6'9", I'd be in the top 4% or 2% in terms of height, right? There's nothing wrong with being 6'9", but there's nothing. But if you don't know you're 6'9" and you go out in the schoolyard to play with the other kids in grade 3 and play leapfrog and they all get hurt, people, and no one can tell you're 6'9", just as they can, but, you know, with ADHD, you can't see it. So you play leapfrog, you're 6'9", all the other kids get hurt. People say, well, you're aggressive, you're antisocial, you don't like children, you have to go to special class. So part of what the joy of what, for me and for Patrick McKenna, who plays Harold on the Red Green Show and was the star of the documentary we did, him getting diagnosed, is knowing, this is why I write skit comedy, short sketches, and not full-length novels or movie screenplays.
Well, and Rick, when you got your diagnosis, I mean, you were successful in your career, which I suppose a lack of success is something that probably leads some people to look for help, to ask for help.
Yep.
But what was it that made you think, I do need help? What else was going on in your life that wasn't going well?
Well, it was the amount of effort it took. And there was a constant feeling, which is very common, that I should be able to do more, that I should be able to focus. I accomplished a lot, but the cost was unbelievable, the amount of work I had to do. And so 1,000 ideas that were never followed up on. Enough, once there was a deadline, bam, I could get it done. Because what happens is, one way of looking at the ADHD brain is that it's kind of half asleep. It's one sort of model. So when the teacher's talking, it's hard to tune in. Now, when we're interested, we are very interested. We are hyper-focused. We love what we love. The problem is we get into scuba diving, we buy every magazine, we buy all the equipment, and 3 months later, we learn about quilting. And now all of that stuff's gone, and we're on to the next thing. So very intense when we're interested, which is great in an ER room, right, or as a police officer, long periods of not having stuff, and then, bam, you're busy. So in the cost of not knowing, I'll just give you some figures. We have, on average, these are the studies compared to, this is an adult, untreated and undiagnosed, compared to a non-ADHD adult, you have 7 times the rate of multiple car accidents. You have 2.5 times the rate of divorce, 2.5 times the rate of bankruptcy. You cost the healthcare system twice as much. You have higher rates of unplanned pregnancies because of the impulsivity. You have higher rates of STDs because of the impulsivity. You have higher rates of divorce, of family dysfunction, of low self-esteem, of underachieving, because the world isn't designed for people who are creative, whose minds move quickly, who never stop, who can jump from one thing to another, who are interested in everything, curious about everything, talkative. The world is designed for people who can type and fill it in linear thinking. So when we're successful, And you can look at Richard Branson. You can look at David Neeleman, who created JetBlue. You can look at David Orfalea, who created Kinko's. And all ADHD, most of them, if not all of them, have dyslexia, which is very common. 40% of ADHD kids have a learning disorder. 70% of ADHD adults have something else going on at some point. It could be a learning disorder. It could be depression or anxiety. Or I can't tell you, since I started on this journey, how many middle-aged women have come up and said, I saw you last year, or I saw your website and realized it's not depression. And I'm off depression medication for the first time in 15 years. I can laugh. I can cry. I'm dealing with my ADHD. My house is clean for the first time. And I'm back in school finishing my degree. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So how did it change your life, your diagnosis? What kind of treatment did you pursue?
Well, the first thing was simply knowing. The relief of knowing I'm not lazy, I'm not stupid, I'm not a bad person. The fact that I'm tuning out when my kids are telling me something that's important to them, it's not because I'm a bad father. It's because it's late in the day and my focus is gone right now. So just knowing how I work gave me huge advantage in adjusting my schedule. I stopped trying to write after 3 in the afternoon and then would come back again when my second burst of energy comes, which is usually in the evening. And no wonder I got into show business. You rehearse during the day, you perform at night. When in the morning, I'm great to go in the evening. So just knowing the relief of that and understanding my own patterns and my gifts. What's interesting is people with ADHD dismiss their gifts I can't even get my taxes done, right, Charity? Like another $200 fine for my taxes being late. And I look at that and I would think, well, I'm a bad father because that could have gone to my kid's college fund. What kind of selfish, lazy, blah, 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 blah. No. Hand it off to an accountant and go write some more red-green stuff. Spend your time here. Stop trying to force yourself. So that was amazing. And then there are many different things, exercise and a lot of different practices that make a huge difference, and simple organizing tools. And, of course, medication, which is the big one. It's the most controversial, which is it's sad in a way because it's, doctor after doctor after doctor has told us it's pretty much the safest medication around because it is given to very young kids. And again, without dealing with this, higher rates of addiction, of gambling, and the medication itself has been used since 1937. So despite what certain groups have spread about the medication, and I got to tell you, I'm the most anti-medication person there is, but it made a dramatic difference for me. I was able to sit down and actually do my taxes in one day.
We're going to have to take a short break here. We'll be back in a moment. So stay with us, Rick, and we're also going to, in a moment, welcome Morgan Hall into the conversation. She is a licensed clinical psychologist who practices in Des Moines. We will tackle that question of medication in a few minutes as well. Rick Green is here with me today. He is the author of ADD Stole My Car Keys. We'll continue our conversation in a moment, and we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about attention deficit disorder in adults. If this is something you have experience with, maybe you've been diagnosed, maybe someone close to you has been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD as an adult, we'd love to hear your story. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Morgan Hall. She is a licensed clinical psychologist who practices in Des Moines. With me right now is Rick Green. He is the author of ADD Stole My Car Keys, The Surprising Ways Adult Attention Deficit Disorder Affects Your Life and Strategies for Creating a Life You Love. And Rick, just before the break, we were talking about your diagnosis and your treatment. And one of the things you said is when you suspected that you had ADD, you were a little reluctant to get a diagnosis and to get treatment because you're a comedian and being creative is what you've built your whole life around. And you were worried that you would lose your creativity. So in getting treatment and going on medication and learning about a lot of different management techniques that you could use, do you feel like you've lost anything?
Well, that's a really great question, Charity, because that was definitely a concern. What I found was that I was actually just far more productive, and that was the difference. There's a difference between creativity and aimless mind-wandering that you can't control, daydreaming, especially when you're driving or when you're doing, you know, other things, or when you're trying to actually get a script finished and your mind is going off. It's completely different than creative, which is coming up with ideas that actually further things along. And one comedian I know told me that before he started medication, he said, I used to have like 25 ideas on Post-its all around my computer, and now I have one finished script. And that's what I found, and that's what the studies have shown. There was one done at the University of Memphis, I guess in 2011, that said that compared 30 students who were non-ADHD with 30 who were, and half of those 30 were on medication, half weren't. And the students who have ADHD or ADD scored higher on 11 standard tests for creativity, and the medication made no difference. So it's not about necessarily just becoming busier, but it is about being able to manage and control, so you can actually be there when your wife is talking to you, when friends are talking to you, so you can hear what people are saying when you're in a noisy restaurant, because our minds are not necessarily terrific at filtering, so a lot of stuff gets through. Now, you know, that allows the creativity to flow and can allow us to be cross-disciplinary, but what I found was it just took me up a notch. And that's why when our brains are, you know, you could say our brains are half asleep, which is why in a crisis, what overwhelms most people's brains, police, fire, and others, if they have ADHD, they suddenly are very calm. So I could be calmer walking out on stage in front of 2,000 people than I would be sitting down to have to do my taxes. And that's astounding to me to realize that at the time, you know, to finally start to go, yeah, I can do this, and I'm not great at that. So this is really a journey of self-discovery. And, you know, and I could look back and see, this is my dad, this is my grandfather, and on and on.
And you feel that your undiagnosed ADD really affected your relationships before this, right?
Yeah, it costs, I mean, studies have shown it costs us in terms of income, it costs us in terms of opportunity. We're not necessarily there, or we're over too hyper-focused. We'll end up going to clean the office finally and end up sorting paper clips by color. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, once I understood it, once I read about it, and this is why the website totallyadd.com is so important, because there's so much information. We have 30 different experts, top experts from across North America, with all kinds of information. There's no other resource like it, and we've even created what we're calling the premium membership, where people can interact with each other, send private messages. It's almost like Facebook for ADHD, plus webinars and on and on. The information is crucial. And I say to parents who are afraid of this, I say, look, it's nothing to be afraid of, but it is something to know about. There's nothing wrong with being 6'9", right? If you're at the end of the height spectrum, there's nothing wrong with that. But boy, it would be good to know, because it will impact your life. You should probably give up trying to be a gymnast and think about basketball.
Well, I'm going to bring Morgan Hall into the conversation now. Rick Green, stay with us. And
sure.
Morgan Hall is a licensed clinical psychologist. She practices in Des Moines. Hello, Morgan.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. I'm really looking forward to being able to inform so many people at one time about this really serious issue.
Well, I think that ADD and ADHD, these are terms that get thrown around a lot in conversation. There are jokes made about them. Let's try to understand the difference between ADD and ADHD before we move any further. Can you explain the difference for us?
Basically, the difference is the hyperactivity component, what the H is for. In terms of diagnosing, it's always diagnosed as ADHD, and there are three subtypes. There's the inattentive type, which Rick has been talking about and which I have. There is the hyperactivity type, and then there is the combined type. So it is the hyperactive component that makes the difference. Those are the children, actually, that are usually noticed in school and get attention and get treatment. The ones that don't have that are often described as stupid and lazy because people don't know what's going on with them. And there's a lot of shame associated starting in elementary school and high school because those children know they're different.
Well, and not only do these kids often not get diagnosed because it flies under the radar and grow up to continue to experience problems with it, but also a lot of adults may have ADD or ADHD, and diagnosis just wasn't nearly as common when they were kids, right?
Absolutely. In fact, the American Psychological Association published an article about the generation, the lost generation, which would be the baby boomers, because it wasn't recognized then. And of all the people I see in my practice, eventually I identify about 30% as having ADD, adult ADD. And it's life-changing for them, as Rick was saying.
Well, and Rick was talking about some of the symptoms that he experienced. What are the symptoms that when you're talking to someone who has come to you for help, what are the symptoms that start setting off the warning bells and making you think about ADD?
People who talk about being loners or people, some of the hallmarks that really tick me, identify the person are those people. Some people never open their mail. Or never do their laundry, or only will do dishes when there are no more clean dishes, and they will do laundry when there are no more clean clothes. So, and it's not a matter of being lazy, it's a matter of truly being incapable of getting up and getting started and doing things. Some of the others are people who seem to have lots of projects going on and never get finished. Or they've come to me because they're having trouble in their relationships, not listening. Many of the things that Rick spoke about, I had one woman come in because one of the characteristics of some of the people with ADD is a very short fuse. They get easily frustrated or impatient and then have a sudden surge of anger and will yell and scream. But then it's all over. However, they've left a lot of damage with their family members. One woman came in because she was screaming at her husband all the time and really was concerned about that. And we talked more, and I realized that she probably had ADD. She started on the medication, which I agree with Rick is the best first-line treatment. And then a couple weeks, the next time I saw her, she said her husband had told her he had fallen in love with her all over again.
Wow. Rick, you want to add something?
Well, it's so great. It's that the medication, here's the thing that I always think about medication. People say, I don't want my husband or myself or my son or daughter on medication. And the answer I say is, guess what? They'll find something. And so 10% of teenagers are heavy marijuana users. 30% of ADHD kids are. And a doctor from Calgary who runs a clinic said that when the kids get proper ADHD medication rather than marijuana, which is probably raised by a biker gang, grown and covered in pesticides and mixed with crystal meth, when they get proper medication, the rate drops to 12%, not quite the same as their non-ADHD peers. But I was having seven cans of Coca-Cola a day. I was leaving everything to the last minute, using crises as my way to wake up my brain. People will get addicted to exercise, sex, shopping, shopaholics. We'll find ways to wake up our brains. Cigarettes and nicotine. You know, and people will say, well, I don't want to try a stimulant medication. Now, if you excuse me, I have to go get my morning coffee or I'm no good. It's like, yeah.
Well, and then Mary from Altoona asked us to please discuss the overlap of ADD and ADHD and substance abuse. And Morgan, can you add to that? This is a very common problem among people with ADD, right?
Yes, it is. I have encountered a few adults who have continued to use marijuana because it allows them to get their work done. People, for instance, I had a representative who traveled And the only way he could get his travel statement, expense statement done is to smoke some pot. So we got him on a illegal drug, and he's doing just fine now. But that is a problem.
We got this email from Lindsay in Des Moines. She said, I was diagnosed with ADD, and I don't know if I believe it or not. I'm just curious and wanted to ask your guest, is it possible to have ADD on top of other mental disorders such as depression and anxiety, or does it always have to be one or the other? And there is a strong relationship here as well, Morgan, right, between ADD and depression.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, 86% of people with ADD are depressed. They also suffer from anxiety because they are constantly, especially as adults, because we're working and it can really have an impact on our livelihood. So they spend all day long worrying about, did I get this project in? Where did I put this article? Am I supposed to be at a meeting? Another hallmark characteristic is being easily overwhelmed. People with ADD, if they have more than two things to do, they don't know how to prioritize or get started. They just get overwhelmed and give up. So anxiety and depression are definitely a part of it. I recently had a client who was going to the doctor for a thyroid condition because of her depression and fatigue, supposedly, but discovered that she absolutely has ADD. And when people start on the medication, those things clear up fairly quickly. I also, in my clients, I use meditation, which has been researched and studied and shown to actually generate new neurons. But the purpose of meditation is to increase awareness. And that's what people with ADD lack. We aren't self-aware most of the time.
Bob is on the line in Sioux City. Hi, Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. I've been nodding my head, yes, all through this program. It's really been great because I've got a good friend who has ADD, and the problem is her family is doesn't even want to know about it. And I wondered if there was any advice that I could give her family members to try to explain. Because once I read about ADD, it was just, aha. It was like, it was an incredibly mind-opening experience when I learned about ADD. And I just wondered if you had any advice for that.
Well, Rick, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. The stigma is still huge. It's considered an illness. It's considered that it's something wrong. But, you know, my perspective is now I look at it and go, yeah, if you're 6'9", is your family ashamed and not wanting to know you're 6'9"? Or is there going to be huge advantage to knowing it? And maybe you can actually adjust your life by raising the doors in the house and moving the hanging light fixtures a little higher and so on. The best thing, I think, is the documentary that we made with Patrick McKenna. It's won all kinds of awards. It's called ADD and Loving It. And it's two comedians, and we have fun with it. And I can't tell you the number of emails, phone calls, and stuff, people in tears. One security guard said, I taped it and sat when I got home from work at 2 in the morning. I thought I'd watch 5 minutes. And 4 hours later, I reached the end of your one-hour program. I couldn't hear. I kept to stop and rewind because I was crying so hard with laughter and with tears when I recognized myself. We've had people who are on the verge of suicide and had bought the pills and saw the program on PBS and went, oh, my goodness, and flushed the pills down. Have written us to tell us this. So the program and the website are designed to have some fun with it, because if you're out there, if you've got these traits, if you want to call it that, then you want to know. And there's nothing wrong with it. And the other thing about it, of course, I think why so many families are reluctant to talk about it is because it is so inheritable. And you can't imagine the number of people who go, oh, my goodness, there's nothing. Now, I'm mentally ill because this is me. And my dad's, what are you saying? We're all crazy people. No. You're just not good at this and really good at this, and you don't know it.
Well, and Rick, when you and I spoke before, a couple of months ago, you mentioned that the fact that your wife understands ADD and is supportive of you, you feel that that's really responsible for the success of this marriage.
Absolutely, because here's the thing, that when you know, when my wife knows that I'm tuning out or can look at the clock and go, it's 4 o'clock, or see that I'm flustered at 11 and go, did you take your pill this morning? Like, oh, shoot, I forgot. Okay, I better have a second coffee. So it's the knowing. Because if I'm, as I said earlier, if I'm tuning out when my wife is pouring her heart out, how am I going to make that mean? And she's a sensitive gal. She's at the other end of the spectrum, and she's going to look at me, realize I've tuned out, and what's she going to make that mean? And knowing now what's going on, huge difference. It's like, okay, speak a little louder. Next time, don't go to such a noisy place to have a conversation. Let's whatever. But that, it takes all of the sting out of it. It takes it, okay, you just, you know, it's having a hearing problem, being hard of hearing, you know, be a good thing to know. Know your husband is ignoring you. He's got bad hearing.
Rick,
so what?
Rick, thank you so much for being us today. We're going to say goodbye to Rick Green. He's the author of ADD Stole My Car Keys, also one of the co-creators of The Red Green Show. And he's also one of the creators of the website totallyadd.com. Morgan Hall is a licensed clinical psychologist who practices in Des Moines. And Morgan, please stay with us. We will be back after a break, and you're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about attention deficit disorder in adults. And Morgan Hall is with me. She's a licensed clinical psychologist who practices in Des Moines. She herself has ADD and has been successfully treated for ADD. And Morgan, we need to talk about the drug treatments for ADD. Rick Green is very supportive of the use of these drugs. You yourself are very supportive of the use of these drugs, although we do know that there is abuse of some of these drugs going on, and it seems to be particularly prevalent among college students. And we just read a horror story in the New York Times about a young man who committed suicide after abusing Adderall just this past weekend. So, Morgan, when you see stories like that and you know that these drugs, there's a black market for them as well, what is your response?
That is definitely concerning. However, what I know for certain is that people who actually have ADD don't abuse the drugs and cannot become addicted to the drugs because it doesn't have the same effect. Someone who doesn't have ADD, if they take a stimulant, they're going to have all kinds of energy and be able to do things. They're going to talk a lot and stay up for hours, and they can study for hours. And those are the folks that tend to get addicted. People with ADD, it's sort of like, you know, when you're just waking up in the morning and you're not quite sure where you are and not awake yet, that's kind of an extreme metaphor for how an ADD brain is. So the stimulants wake our brains up to where your brain is every day. And there isn't a desire to abuse the drugs for people with ADD because it's not a matter of getting pleasure from them. The pleasure centers in our brain are the ones that get activated when people use drugs and get high and feel good about themselves, or they're able to wipe out all the bad stuff in their lives. But that is not the case for people with ADD. Yes.
And you mentioned this is these drugs tend to be stimulants, and which seems a little counterintuitive to people when you look at, especially with attention deficit disorder, with hyperactivity, you think the last thing that this person needs is a stimulant. How does that work?
Basically, those particular people are active because they're trying to stay awake. They're trying to do all these things to keep their brain awake. It's not an intentional thing that they're doing. It's just part of their chemical makeup, and that's where the activity comes from. Once they're on the appropriate dosage and the appropriate stimulant, they're able to calm down.
We had an email from Dan in Albion. He says, I can't believe I'm listening to my life. I was diagnosed with adult ADD about 18 years ago by a psychiatrist who told me that I had managed to self-medicate with caffeine. I consumed massive quantities of Coke, Diet Coke, and coffee ever since I was old enough to buy my own soda. And that's a very common way that people with ADD do learn to cope, is through using caffeine. But we also mentioned that there seems to be a lot of other substance abuse that goes along possibly with ADD, or there's a correlation between the two. Why would people with ADD be drawn to depressants such as alcohol or marijuana?
They are really not drawn to the alcohol or the marijuana in some way allows their brain to focus. The alcohol, however, I believe is to numb all the associated emotions and situations and consequences of ADD. For instance, in relationships, job loss, not being successful, never being successful is very difficult to live with and is a challenge for people who are undiagnosed and have ADD.
We have a lot of people on the phone who want to ask questions, and you're welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100. This is Alex on the line from Marengo. Hello, Alex.
Hello there.
Hi, what's your question?
I've just been listening to this, really speaking to me. I just feel like, well, are you there?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, I just didn't hear you there. All right. Yeah, and of course, I've been on medications before. Your Ritalin, your Concertas, all right? Sometimes I kind of have the occasional cup of tea every morning when I get up as well.
So this is, you've been diagnosed with ADD?
Yeah, since about when I was 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you find a lot of the things we're talking about still resonate with you that you're still struggling with, Alex?
Yeah.
Did you?
Can I get some things that really get under my skin, like if I miss a spot when doing dishes and that.
Did
yes.
you have a question that maybe Morgan Hall can help you with?
Yeah. I just want to get my kind of 2 cents in.
Okay.
I would like to respond to that question. Once someone has been diagnosed and they, depending on who they go to for the medication, some experiences are better than others, because it takes quite a long time, 2 or 3 months sometimes, to find the right medication, the right dosage, the right schedule for taking the medication. There are slow release or extended release stimulant medications, and there are immediate release. And the difference is the slow release start out gradually, and then they peak, and then they decline in the system. They all are gone within 4 or 5 hours after taking them. So it's a matter of how you want to, you know, wake your brain up, slowly or immediately. And there's always a need for a second dose in the afternoon. And sometimes if you've got children and laundry and grocery shopping or work to do at home, a late afternoon dose is also appropriate. Perhaps not as strong a dose, because obviously it's a stimulant and you don't want it to interfere with sleep. But what I've also heard from a lot of my clients is they actually sleep better because they don't have all these things going through their mind. Did I do this? What did I forget? Oh, my goodness, I should have taken care of that.
Alex, thank you so much for your call. And Morgan, I think that there has been a feeling for many years that ADD is something that kids grow out of. It's something that you have
right.
as a child and then you lose. Do some people grow out of it?
No. If you're born with it and you die with it. And I think that's the reason we are encountering so many adults with ADD, because there was the belief for a very long time that it was a childhood disorder, because over the course of time, people will develop strategies to compensate for the problems they have, like being organized. So they will create elaborate structures so they know they can get everything done. But then if somebody comes in or something happens, life occurs and it undoes their structure, then they're just scattered and lost. And So, yes, it was once believed, and there are still many people who still believe that. Some of my clients come back and tell me they feel like they're criminals because they're adults and they go to the pharmacy and the pharmacist will say, you're not age appropriate for this medication, you know, and what are you doing with it? Even though they have a doctor's prescription. So it is still a myth.
Lynn is on the line next from Fort Dodge. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, I was listening to it, and a couple years ago, my grandson was diagnosed with ADHD, and then within a year, his mom was then diagnosed with adult ADD. And listening to all the symptoms that your other guest was describing, it resonated so powerfully with me. And I'd always suspected my daughter's dad was ADD. I think I might have it. My first question would be, where would I go to get a diagnosis to see whether I do or not?
Morgan?
A psychologist can do an assessment. Some psychologists specialize in that, such as myself. I don't know. Where are you calling from?
From Fort Dodge.
What you could do is call the Iowa Psychological Association and get the name of someone who may or may not specialize in it, but they can do an assessment and write a report and send you to the appropriate doctor and help you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And the other thing I was wondering was a lot of those symptoms also seem to describe two of my other children. And is it prevalent for all of your children? Is that possible that all of them could have that? I mean, I can tell you the stacks of mail that my boys will not go through. And I've got one with a lot of other issues going on and not able to hold a job. And it's like we're struggling constantly, all of us.
It is possible. When I encounter a client with ADD, I will ask them, okay, so which of your parents has it? And without even a breath, they can tell me which parent it is. So it's definitely hereditary, and those folks are struggling. So, yeah, if you have it, one of your children has it, or if your husband, as you said, had it, it's a good chance that one or more of them do. And what you've described sounds like it's a high probability. That's what's going on.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your help. It's been a great show to listen to.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for your call, and good luck to you and your family. Next up, let's go to Deborah. Hello, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
We can hear you. My question, I have a close relative with it. Are there any treatments to help combat the effects of ADD that do not affect blood pressure?
Yes. I would check. There are some non-stimulant medications that would not affect the blood pressure. And as I mentioned earlier, I also teach all of my clients meditation. And the specific type of meditation that the research has been done with is Buddhist meditation, though you don't have to be Buddhist, but it is a matter of learning how to clear all the thoughts and become more self-aware, place your mind where you want it to be. And that is a huge advantage. The other thing I would like to just mention is new research in just the last 5 or 10 years has discovered that our brains remain plastic. In other words, they can change and we can develop new neurons and new neuronal pathways until we die. So what I have found for myself and using the medication, I was able to change habits. One of the characteristics is people with ADD will put a dirty dish in the sink, even though the dishwasher is right there. So that's very much what I've done my whole life. But since being on the medication, I have trained myself to put the things in the dishwasher as soon as I'm finished. And so that has created in my brain a brand new set of neurons that are working together and will sustain that new habit the old habit, if you don't use it, you lose it. So that old, those neurons are no longer active or together. So that's very good news. And that is a way that meditation can help. It allows you to focus and change habits.
Deborah, thank you so much for your call. And Morgan, in the idea of retraining your brain, developing new ways to cope with ADD, and clearly that's a lot of what you help people who have ADD do, learn to cope with the things in their life that weren't getting done before. Can you learn to cope to the point where you don't need the medication?
I can't answer that right now because I'm sure at some point with a very intentional effort and extensive time that might be possible. However, the medication is not harming people. So on some level, I've been able to create new habits and new neuronal pathways, but I still need my brain awake. And that is a different set of brain chemicals altogether. So I don't know if that would be possible. And there are different degrees of ADD. Some people, I used to refer to myself as a little ADD. And some people have almost every symptom there is. So depending on that, it would determine whether or not they may or may not be able to go off of medication. But there are definitely strategies and tools that I teach people to be able to manage their life. And one of the most serious problems is that what Rick was talking about is being easily overwhelmed with too many things to do. So I will encourage people to make a list, and then everything on the list, break that into 5 steps. And do one little step for 20 minutes because sustaining attention for a very long time is almost impossible.
We've received this email from a Drake University law student who doesn't want to give their name, but they say, as a law student with ADD who hides my disability from peers and professors to prevent having to explain and justify why I do the things I do and get the accommodations I do, I can't express the gratitude I feel for having this conversation in public. I have even had a peer say to me that they believe anyone who gets extended time for an accommodation should not be allowed to be ranked in their class. Having worked very hard and put in more time than my non-ADD peers to be ranked 4th in my law class, this is humiliating and devastating. Everything that your guest describes, including my own sudden shifts from A's to failing at 9th grade, I can relate to. So thank you for shedding light on this. There really is a stigma for people who struggle with ADD that is very real, isn't there, Morgan?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know how much time we have, but one thing I'd like to mention is, as children, some of these children that were not identified suffer very severe physical abuse by the parents because they do appear lazy or stupid. And so some of the people I see have a history of that, which is another problem. However, I do offer groups for people with ADD and help them learn how to talk about it with their peers and with others. And I feel so sympathetic with this law student because no one should be judging him. He's working 10 times harder.
Morgan, thank you so much. Morgan Hall is a licensed clinical psychologist who practices in Des Moines. We've been talking this hour about adult ADD. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry, with technical support from John Pemble. This is Talk of Iowa.